What is that one thing that inspires you to wake up every day and go to work?
I mean, I wake up every day because partially because my wife has me help with the kids to get morning in the morning. But from a work perspective, I think the thing that really is exciting for me is thinking about the how does Web3 and blockchain can bring a lot of utility to everyone around the world. We've seen how the power of the internet and mobile devices have changed everyone's lives in many ways for the better, right? So now we have access to everything through mobile apps. We can watch videos and stream them. We can buy things through Amazon. We can connect with our friends on places like Facebook and Instagram. And thinking about this next generation of the internet and how blockchain kind of provides that core foundation of ownership coming back to users, of permissionless and trustless transactions between each other, is really the next form of communication of how all of us will interoperate, you know, across the billions of people around the world. And I think that chance to really drive forward the technology in that space and be a, you know, be a changing force for the better, in which we build out what is really a public utility for everyone around the world to use without restriction, with very low fees, that really are allowing everyone in the world to participate and scale out to, you know, the biggest use cases possible. That gets me super excited about this journey. And that, I think that also inspires a lot of our team in terms of, like, you know, this is an important mission for everyone.
That sounds so great. And we're super excited to learn more about your journey so far. So maybe let's start by getting into crypto and how, you know, you got to co-found Aptos Labs.
So my background is actually in distributed computing and parallel computing. My PhD was in, that's me spending time working at different national laboratories, thinking about problems to solve for their largest scientific applications. I work in some of the largest supercomputers in the world and building out scalable software for it in something called MPI, MPIO. I worked in parallel file systems, parallel computing. And I think during that journey, I got really excited about the scale and how do we kind of support huge applications that can have amazing impacts on the scientific side of the world, whether it's protein folding, drug discovery, finite element analysis, all these kind of things can really help us to understand the physical world a lot better. And then as I made my way into web search at Yahoo and then Dunline, I spent a decade at Meta working on data infrastructure products, taking some of the same ideas of high performance computing, but how do we scale those to large amounts of data processing and supporting analytics for every product at Meta. I worked on different systems from 2011 to 2018, basically, across MapReduce and Corona, Hive, Spark graph processing, data pipeline processing. And so along those systems, you know, we had more than 500,000 computers that would process exabytes of data on a daily basis, powering analytics for everyone, or, you know, everyone in Meta. And, you know, just kind of growing and can keep growing and growing in scale and in performance and supporting those use cases. You know, it's definitely really rewarding from an infrastructure standpoint. But I kind of was introduced to the Bitcoin paper back in kind of 2017 or even 16. I read it. I found it very fascinating because for the first time, it was a distributed systems paper that had an economic angle to it. Most of these systems, you don't think about that because they're run by large entities or by individuals. And so the economics are not, you know, important consideration. They're there, but they're more for a single entity to take care of. And Bitcoin was the first paper to kind of show like how you could build economic security around a distributed protocol and how cool and how neat that was and how it could actually change the way people think about value transfer and stores of value. And in 2018, Meta started off with this ambitious effort called Libra. And Libra was, you know, very much a let's try something and see what happens kind of effort where, like, we don't know exactly what we're going to do in the blockchain space, the Web3 space, but we think it's interesting. And we think that, you know, Facebook has a lot of people on it, billions of users. And if we could support remittances, cross-border payments, and even just like a 24/7 permissionless way for us to transact around the world, what a change that would be for society. And so in 2018, I joined the team. I started working on the consensus protocol. I got a chance to really research and understand and study the different ways in which consensus protocols could be used for blockchains, and ultimately kind of chose one, which was Hot Stuff, an academic paper. It had never been put in production. We had to go ahead and add a lot of interesting things around it, especially on the liveness side and the pacemaker. And then we had a great team that was being assembled that worked on the blockchain. I was fortunate to be the tech lead for the blockchain team and for the team that would ultimately launch the testnet for Diem and also kind of take it forward to the future. And then kind of being head of all kind of the Web3 efforts at Meta. So it was a great journey for me, and I really enjoyed that. And I think at that time, it became pretty clear, though, that Meta would not be able to launch the blockchain. And so along that journey, I had met Mo, who was working on the partnership side, leading efforts on partnerships for the Novi wallet. And the wallet did launch, which was really great. But we did not launch the blockchain. And so Mo and I felt very passionately that this technology belonged out in the open. We worked together on figuring out how to do that. And end of 2021, in December, we left Meta and started this journey. We were very fortunate to see a lot of folks from Meta that we worked with in the past on Diem. We're really excited about this journey as well and came to join us. And it's been an amazing journey since then, a real rocket ship. We kind of started with our core team in February of 2022. And then 8 months later, we launched the protocol. And it was a crazy amount of effort and dedication and blood, sweat, and tears and sleepless nights. But, we it was definitely worth it. And we've been kind of on that rocket ship ever since, just kind of iterating on it, improving it, building up an ecosystem. And we're really excited to see where we are today with growing Move to hundreds of monthly active developers, one of the largest non-EVM communities that is growing very rapidly. And just seeing all the traction has back to your earlier question, has given me a lot of enthusiasm, energy around what's coming next.
That's an incredible journey. So that's actually really great, and would love to double click a little bit more about Meta's, blockchain, division at that time you led, and then how did it actually, translate into Aptos, and also some of the major challenges you faced there, and how did it get to Aptos later?
So I think one of the biggest and most important things we did from the very beginning was make sure that the code we wrote into Diem, it was renamed to Diem, all that code was open sourced and under the Apache 2 license, which meant anyone was allowed to take that code base and do whatever they want to do with it. And in fact, there is a project called Zero Libra who has launched a network. I think that was also one of the happiest days for me, because I got to see our code go live into production on, it's different than another network, but seeing code, as an engineer and as someone who kind of works in the field, of course you want to see your code being used by other people. And so when they launched, it was a really happy moment for me. But at the same time, knowing that, this is just one part of our journey. We have a long way to go in terms of building out a protocol that can support billions of people. Something that people aren't really aware of, I think, is that, Move is a very early language at that time. In 2022, we kind of built the bare bones of Move just to support that initial Libra Diem use case. And so there's a lot of work that went into kind of making sure it was production grade, production ready, that it wasn't, couldn't be hacked, and that we kind of closed and sealed all the bugs that were available in that space in order for the ecosystem to kind of develop very rapidly. There's also a lot of kind of gaps in terms of language features, which we've added over time, and we're continuing to add over time. And so it's really exciting to also take forward a new language into the ecosystem that we think is going to be a step change function for developers. We're building out a new compiler. We're building a new VM that's going to give it way faster performance. We're adding new language features every single day. And that that ability for us to move quickly and to continue to upgrade the way the developer experience looks, as well as the protocol, is something that's really core to our mission. We believe that the technology is continuing to evolve over time. A lot of that we are developing in-house. And if there are other ideas that we can learn from externally, we're always happy to incorporate those. But it's got to keep changing. And as we've seen in the past, if you have networks that just are very stagnant from a technology standpoint, or even from an ecosystem development standpoint, it's very hard for them to continue to progress over time. we have to kind of keep driving forward and forward because, you know, there are 5 billion internet users out there that are kind of waiting to take advantage of this tech. And we've got to make sure it scales for all of them.
How do you explain Aptos to non-blockchain people?
I'd say the best way I can describe it to someone who's not in the blockchain space is really as a going back to the idea of a public utility. And most people are familiar with the idea of electricity, roads, water, and how those things can impact their lives in a beneficial way. Aptos, I think of that as well as a public permissionless database that anyone in the world can use for a very low fee. And it's intended for this database to be shared amongst all people. The same way those kind of resources of are shared by everyone, right? Whether it's roads or water or electricity. And so I think those are the simplest ways to think about it. The other part, of course, is going to be, you know, what's different about, you know, something like Aptos and blockchains versus the internet. The internet is something that is kind of run by corporations in many ways. There are, of course, many individuals that run websites as well. But by and large, a lot of our time is being spent on these corporations. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. They've actually provided great products out there. That's why they've done so well with respect to providing utility to people as well as their market share. But ultimately, we definitely want to have a world where some of these things happen directly between people. We can transfer own assets between each other. We can have control over how those assets are used, whether it's products like AI or others. We have that right and control. And so allowing that kind of writing control, as well as making this a public utility, I think generally helps people understand, like, you know, this is a change in the way we think about the internet and how we start to interact with each other and communicate with each other over time.
If you look back, what have been some of the learnings for you as a Web3 founder while building Aptos? Because it must be very different than being a leader at Meta back then.
I've gotten that question a couple of times, and I'd say that there are some differences for sure, but there's also a lot of similarities. And I'll start with the similarities, right? So when I worked at Meta, we worked on a lot of small teams where we kind of try to build up products and then, like, you know, see if they're successful in Meta or externally. And if they don't work, we'd kind of kill them fast and kind of restart new ones. And a lot of these projects I started kind of with smaller teams. And in some sense, Libra itself was almost like a startup internally within Meta. So I say from that aspect, there are a lot of similarities of, like, just trying to get in on MVP very quickly, try to understand your customer use case, understand the requirements, and try to build value early on and then expand from that value into larger use cases. We had done something similar with that with our explorations of how to bring Spark into the data warehouse at Meta, supporting for the ads use cases, and then seeing that eventually sprawl to the entire data warehouse use case that I've been working on. And so from that aspect, very, very similar. I think the aspect is very different, though, when it comes to startups versus kind of leading efforts in a company like Meta, is that the pace in crypto is so fast and it doesn't ever take a break, right? You know, we're 24/7 Twitter. We're always also building. We're listening to devs. We're getting hit up by, you know, ecosystem projects all the time about things that they'd like to see us do, as well as exciting news that they have to share with us. And so it's really a... it's really almost like a full lifestyle to be involved as a Web3 startup in this time and age, and, you know, very, very exciting time for us, like, you know, and also for our industry, where there's so much momentum and enthusiasm and people that are trying to build out incredible new things. Like, we're just at the cusp of where, you know, mass adoption takes off, where that first application comes on and captivates people and helps people see the value of owning your own assets or, you know, verifiable randomness on Aptos, or, you know, other things that you just couldn't do before in the past that are now possible because of this new technology and how it's going to impact people's lives. And so that's what, you know, what I think gets a lot of us through, like, you know, this, definitely the 24/7 nature of things, and, you know, gets me pretty inspired every single day.
Yeah. Super exciting times indeed. And just to follow up with that question just now is, what are, you know, based on your observation so far at Aptos and also working with more Web3 peoples, right? What do you think are some of the unique qualities of Web3 founders versus, let's say, someone in Web2?
I think, you know, that's a good question. It's pretty broad, right? So Web2 right now, there's a lot of interest in AI, obviously, And, you know, in my area, there's been always been an interest in things like data infrastructure products, whether it's Snowflake or Databricks, which are also thinking about more AI focuses. I think the difference is the customer to some degree. In Web3, we are building solely for developers and users. And I think a lot of these other kind of more infrastructure companies tend to be more towards developers and enterprises. And so I think that difference is really interesting because we're trying to really build out communities. Whereas if you have a cloud provider like Amazon or Google, it's less about the community aspect. It's really about kind of the services you need, and you might take and stitch together different services from different cloud providers. But in blockchain, there's also this community aspect that is really fun, where people get excited about being a part of something new. And it's not just the infrastructure. It's really about the people there. It's about the connections you're making. It's about the culture kind of prevailing in different pockets of this, you know, the fabric of your network. So as an example, there was a DeFi someone kind of hosted maybe a month back in Hong Kong, where more than, I think, 25 different DeFi protocols got together that were building on Aptos and started to, you know, have a lot of conversations about, you know, what was happening, what was great, what we want to work on, where, you know, gaps in the infrastructure, where are things that we do exceptionally well, all those fun products. And, you know, some of these things that came out of it were so collaborative. Even though these folks are kind of working in similar spaces, you actually see, say, for instance, two perp dexes talking to each other, thinking about how do they work together, because at the end of the day, having arbitrage between the two of them is actually a really healthy and good thing. And that kind of culture and collaboration is something that, you know, is so much more prevalent in Web3 than it is in Web2, at least in the Aptos space. And we get really excited about seeing something like Inconia Labs, which is a club, a DEX, that is now got five front ends for it, each of them kind of targeted different audiences, and then integrating, you know, across the different sets of ecosystem projects within that space. And the composability of it is always one thing. You know, definitely Aptos and Move make it very easy to compose protocols. But the other aspect is having people that want to be building composable things across them and wanting to integrate and wanting to leverage this feature for the best. And so that's where we see that, you know, when we see those kind of events and people coming together and see the outputs that are coming out of it, whether it's announcements, you know, last week or today about how these new protocols are working together, it's really kind of heartwarming and exciting to see that this is a different way of building. It's not this like kind of zero-sum game, but rather that we can kind of work together in this 1+1=3 attitude that is very different, I think, than the way that many of the other internet companies have built in the past.
What would you recommend to Web2 founders getting to Web3 space? Any tips or suggestions for them for career change?
I think this is basically, you know, kind of my background, right? I'm coming from Web2 space, going to Web3. I think the biggest change for those who kind of worked in a Web2 is just understanding, like, what is the, like, and this is where they struggle a lot. What is the value of blockchain? What is the value of Web3, right? The first thought is I can do everything faster with a centralized database. I can do everything more efficient when I own all the infrastructure for my product. And yes, those things are definitely true, right? But efficient in some aspects. It's not efficient in all aspects. It's definitely not more efficient in terms of being able to provide an infrastructure that people can trust and believe in across the world. That's why today in payment networks, you have all this reconciliation that happens in the background. Those things are real costs that add up, and they're passed on to users. If you have a permissionless blockchain, permissionless network that everyone trusts, you don't pay those costs. Those things are settled instantaneously. And you know, there's things like randomness on chain and in Aptos that randomness is a very hard computer science problem to solve. And, you know, if you think about how you play games or, you know, online, and people are always wondering, like, can I trust the developer of this game that they're kind of being fair to me? They have maybe some random call they're making to their local computer, or maybe they're just biased towards this set of users. We don't know. Whereas something on chain is verifiable about that. And so as you start to see these different value add-ons to things, I think it becomes almost, you know, something you can't ignore as a Web2 developer. And so I would say the more we can do to educate and help people understand the value here and the fact that it can be as easy as to use. So things like we've been building out, like with Aptos Keyless as well as Aptos Passkeys, make the user interface much better than it was in something like having to remember your mnemonic, or understanding that if I lose this, I'm going to lose all my funds, right? That scares a lot of people away. People call this a scam. People say this is not safe. And they're right, right? So we need to continue to keep building out the technology stack such that we can kind of get that usability aspect of Web2, which is heavily optimized for the internet user. And then yet showcase the value of, you know, asset ownership, of permissionless transfer, of instant finality, of new features like randomness that can be done elsewhere, and then all through the interfaces that make Web2 so popular today. I think once people start to understand that, they get excited about it. They understand, you know, is this, you know, this the future we're living in now? Is this the future going forward? Or is it going to be something that really drastically changes? And I think that's when people start to understand there will be a drastic change. And there will be a, you know, this is something that is coming. We don't know exactly when those applications will make their way into consumers, but I think it'll be sooner than most people think.
Raised $350 million dollars. I think it was last year, maybe 2 years ago, with, you know, a bunch of great VCs on board. I guess what was the story that was pushed to these investors back then? Since, you know, I feel like at that point there were a couple of like Ethereum competitor, or there was like Solana, I guess. But curious, like, you know, what was the pitch? Like, what makes you guys better versus, you know, what already existed in the market?
So we started our fundraise in, I think, December of 2021. I think announced it in February. And that was with A16Z leading the round, Multicoin in there, and many other, you know, great investors, Parify, Hound Ventures, Variant, and others. It was raised for $200 million. And I think what they saw in us was really, looking back, a lot of those folks had been involved in the Libra and Diem project. They had been able to witness kind of the technology stack grow over time, as well as what it could do. So they kind of had a little bit of insider knowledge in terms of, like, you know, how performative it was, the team working on it, the quality of the way we were thinking about things, the philosophy, understanding the value of Move, and why this would be a game changer going forward to the future. And I think that's ultimately kind of what they saw is the vision of, you know, how do these 5 billion users, internet users, get access to Web3? And, you know, it's really going to be about progressive technology changes that allow developers to build out unique applications that give them the features to do so, that make sure the fees are low, the scalability that can support billions of people, like what we want to do at Meta. This, I think, was something that had not been done before in the past. And so they got excited about that. And I think that's also something we're obviously very excited about. And we were oversubscribed, and, you know, it was something that we were definitely excited to take forward to market.
And could you explain for the audience what's the primary difference between Aptos and other L1s like Solana, Ethereum, AVAX?
Yep, sure. So Aptos has a couple of unique features, I think, to it. So one thing is having it's a different programming language called Move. Move is designed from the beginning to be very safe and maybe limited initially for smart contract development. Doesn't support things like dynamic dispatch. It's very similar in spirit to Rust. So for those who, you know, your audience who knows Rust, it's kind of a little bit harder to get started. But once you start to use Rust, you realize your code is much safer, much more secure, much more reliable in production. And I think philosophically, that's how you can think about Move. From a system standpoint, we pioneered a new architecture that was pipelined, and it looks very similar to kind of your modern day CPU, superscalar processor. The way you can get such high clock frequencies is because we divide everything up into smaller phases and then have those run just much, much faster. And that's the way you can think about transaction processing Aptos. You have a data dissemination phase, you have a consensus phase, a parallel execution phase, parallel storage phase, and then kind of a proof certification phase. All these phases happen in parallel, which means that they're all going at the same time. The also thing is we also take advantage of all the resources on your machine and have plans for how do we expand that to multiple machines over time. So you can actually grow and scale it the same way the cloud does. And so these are things that that we kind of built and developed over time. We're continuing to iterate on something that's a bit, you know, different from other networks. Another thing that we do talk about is kind of new novel features like on-chain randomness that don't exist on other networks that are secured by the same proof of stake guarantees that the blockchain is secured by. There's also features like, as I mentioned, keyless and passkey, which allow you to log into your accounts the same way you would on any normal website or any normal mobile app. You can use your Face ID. You can just kind of 2 clicks to use your Google login to get into a site or authenticate a transaction. And these are composable things. So if you want to add additional security, maybe the first time you log into a site, you use your passkey. And then if you want to transact and you want to add additional layer of security, you also have to log in with your Google account. And so by making these composable things, it kind of, again, opens a door for the developer as well as the user to onboard as many people as possible to their new application going forward.
What are your guys' thoughts in the intersection of crypto and AI? And I guess, how is Aptos working within this space? Can you give specific examples about how, I guess, about AI on Aptos?
Yeah, so AI is definitely going to consume a lot of our time, mindshare, compute resources for you know, the foreseeable future. And something that I was fortunate to work on a bit while I was at Meta, as a part of our graph processing infrastructure, we worked on collaborative filtering, matrix factorization, as well as some supervised learning like K-means clustering, other products as well. So it's an area that I do care about quite a bit. And I think there are many aspects here to think about AI. So one aspect is thinking about, content ownership as well as, controls over that ownership. This is a super interesting space. So there's so much content, all of us are creating. We're creating content right now on a podcast. We're uploading pictures into Instagram or TikTok. All that content, ideally, we'll have controls over it over time that we control, right? How is that content used? Is it being ingested into a large language model or LLM? If so, have we given permission to do so? And if we, maybe we give permission with the idea that we also get compensated or we benefit from that content in some way. Those controls ideally on the blockchain. Those stamps of kind of we are the content creators also ideally be on the blockchain. It's immutable. It's got timestamping associated with it. It's something that, is easily provable that it's not like some database that someone added an entry and removed it later. It can't be changed. So I think that there's an area where Web3 and blockchain can really, really help a lot, data provenance. And we are working with some folks in that space, can't talk about them yet, unfortunately, who are creating content and high value content with millions of users and really want to see that content protected for their users and for themselves. There's also aspects of AI chatbots that we see today. Aptos Assistant was something we also built in-house that we play around with. But the AI chatbot use cases is definitely evolving over time. And those AI agents, if they have control of the keys and they can actually transact, they definitely can execute a lot of tasks for us, whether it's going to be optimizing our yields, make sure we balance our portfolios in similar spaces, like just what liquidity pools do or, liquidating folks, our bots are going to be able to do, and our bots are going to talk to other bots and kind of optimize across a number of different goals and parameters over time. There's definitely a lot of folks that we also are working with in this space to build out the kind of next chatbots of the future and what the controls are on chain to be able to support protection for these bots, not being able to spend too much money or controls around these bots, being able to transact under certain goal rules and guidance and being able to turn them off at certain times. This is where blockchain can be a really great kind of configuration system that's immutable, that's under fully the user's control, not anyone else's, that we also see as is really promising going forward. Another area that you kind of just started to see is even areas around, right now, a lot of data is being gathered by the largest corporations in the world into these large language models. The models themselves might kind of be open source in the sense that anyone can use them, but the data is not. And so there's a big fight for trying to get access to that data. And you've seen kind of recently how large entities are buying up access to different data sources, whether it's Reddit or others. And I think that we'll see the kind of that trend continuing over time. But there are new startups in this space that are also trying to get access to AI in a way that kind of is more permissionless, maybe having access to your data, but not be able to share that access with large entities and using kind of different economic mechanisms to protect that data and make sure you get compensated for use of that data in larger models. So definitely seeing some trends there that Aptos is really excited to be working with. And maybe the last point, we'll talk a little bit about is the notion around DeepIn and AI, right? So we work and partner with IONET, which is a very large DeepIn provider with tons of GPUs across the world that organizes them into clusters and trains Ray as well as supports inference on their machines. They want to be able to charge per inference and pay those charges to the people providing those resources. And that's where something like Aptos really steps in and it can provide a very efficient payment mechanism that is very low fees, supports high throughput. And so those folks can get paid out, you know, very quickly and as well as they receive, you know, have very low overhead because of the fees being so low over time. So there's a lot. There's a lot. I've gone through a lot of different things in AI, but, you know, we're also just kind of scratching the surface here. There's a ton more things to do here. Every day we're learning about new ideas in the AI space and also like brainstorming things together with different entities and corporations. And so it's truly an area that we are very, very excited about now and, you know, well into the future.
Could you explain to the audience, like what are specific use cases for Aptos? And I guess which ones are you most proud of and why?
There've been four different kind of areas we initially focused on, and that was going to be finance, gaming, social media, and kind of more media entertainment. And we thought that these would be the most promising places for blockchain to kind of start off in. I think what we've seen definitely is a huge pickup in the DeFi space for Aptos, and that composability aspect, the safety of move. You can kind of see almost every single DeFi product in that space. And more importantly, as I mentioned earlier, the composability of those products into larger protocols and larger use cases for people. That's something I'm extremely like excited to see an ecosystem come together and really gain momentum. I think by last month, we kind of reached 500 million as a TVL number, see lots of volume happening organically. And it's just kind of incredible to see that kind of get off the ground and people have been really excited about what's next and how they can leverage the unique features of Aptos to build things that just aren't possible in other networks. So someone like Aconia has built out a central limit order book that kind of rivals the way you think even about traditional exchanges like the NASDAQ and others in terms of performance. And imagine all that happening transparently on chain for everyone to kind of see. We've been also excited to see lots of partners in gaming building on Aptos. There are more than 25 games coming live in the next year. We've had great engagement with the media side through partners like NBC Universal, who have kind of helped, we've helped pioneer a couple ideas around how do we kind of get more fan engagement around different movies out there and even deeper efforts going forward to the future. We've also seen a huge uptick in terms of enterprises in South Korea wanting to build out incredible things. And so SK Telco is a huge partner for Aptos, building out a great wallet and also thinking about different ways to integrate other products into it. There are retailers like Lotte, who I think is the largest retailer in all of South Korea, thinking about how do we build out loyalty programs as well as support the retail use cases of their series of networks and stores across the country. And these are just a couple examples of the things that are kind of happening there. But it's really about everything kind of happening all at once in some places. You have these DeFi ecosystems, grassroots efforts that are taking off. You have enterprise efforts that are really exploring value across large distribution of customers. And then we have AI use cases, which we think is kind of very nascent, but very exciting in terms of being able to put control back into users and also enable new functionality, leveraging kind of the payments infrastructure of blockchain. So it's just really all over the place. But I'd say those kind of four pillars are the ones we've thought about for a long time. And maybe AI is a fifth pillar. I don't know what to call it, but it's something that we're truly excited about.
That's awesome. Now, I have a little longer question from you, Avery. I mean, you already spoke about Move and you know how it's different from Solidity and Rust. And I also saw your tweet this morning about this developer really getting the values of Aptos. And it seems you, of course, work very close with the developer community. And I also organize like a lot of hackathons and I work very closely with builders. So do you think that having Move as a language has worked as a strength for Aptos, or rather it has been more difficult for you to build a community of builders because it was like a barrier in terms of bringing something new? So that's one part of the question. The second is that what do you think is the true ethos, like you said in your tweet, that this particular developer got? I mean, we'll share the tweet in the show notes, but that, you know, this is so different about Aptos that developers really need to understand.
Yeah, great questions. So the first question, for Move, you know, it's it's, you know, definitely a bit of a double-edged sword for sure, right? So if people that are very familiar with Solidity development might have a trickier time coming to Move. We have guides though to help people understand the concepts and map them from Solidity into Move. I think those have been really helpful. We see thousands of views on those every week from our internal metrics. But at the same time, when you think about the developer ecosystem, it's quite small even for EVM, right? Like we have maybe 10,000 devs, 5,000 devs, you know, hard to pick the numbers, kind of figure out what you like. But there are literally millions of developers every year being minted out at different universities. And so this is really it kind of pales in comparison to the overall developer ecosystem more broadly. And so what we've seen instead is really just people are excited about new technology, about new iterations of things. And developers have been building on Move. They rave about it. I mean, that, you know, the one you kind of, you know, brought up is just one of many who have been really excited about, like, look how much more I can do at Move. Look how much more I can do in Aptos because of this, because it's really been kind of custom built towards how do I optimize my workflow and get fast from ideation all the way to production. Those things I think people value, and the more that people hear about it, that's the why it's spreading so quickly and why people are really coming to Aptos to build. To your second question, you know, I think Alex wrote a very long essay, which is like, you know, custom features and different things he likes, and, you know, definitely the BD efforts of the team. But I think what I boil it down to is we're not satisfied ever. And so that is kind of the key mentality here. Like, you know, we over the last weekend, we set a performance record in terms of transactions per second, in any measurable on things like Artemis out there. I think we did 93 million. The previous record was 73 million. Or 75 million or so. And then the next day we did 155 million, breaking our own record there. It's not enough to just be at the top, but rather we have a goal and mission here, which is how do we get to those 5 billion internet users out there? And that is something that, you know, we're not going to be satisfied until we get there. And we're going to keep pushing all dimensions, whether it's improving the language, improving the system performance, the fee structures, the BD efforts, the kind of ecosystem development, everything, right? So there's so much more to do in the space, and we're never going to be satisfied with what we've done because we keep pushing, and we're kind of perfectionists in that way. And we want to see this change happen so badly that we're going to do what it takes to get there. So those are the things I think that kind of are kind of core values. And we see in our builders too, right? They're trying to build the most innovative products. They're trying to, you know, Alex trying to develop the fastest cloud out there and that can scale out to support a NASDAQ use case one day. Like that's their kind of their mission. It's not just to be the best in Web3. And so I think that really resonates well with our community, resonates well with our team, and something that we strive for every day.
Which channel do you feel has worked the best for you in building long-term projects? Is it grants? Is it more hacker houses? Is it, I don't know if you fund startups, but is it like, because, you know, it's like the most, builders are like the foundation of these projects. And which channel do you think works the best?
That's a good question. I think everything is kind of interrelated here, right? Like these are all, like a developer that wants to build a network today, they need some funding to get started. They need a team. They need, of course, a product idea. They also need support from a technical standpoint. All those things are important, right? So I think one thing we probably take a lot of pride in is just having that full stop service across the board, helping to kind of support teams wherever they need it. And sometimes they don't need marketing support. They don't need a grant. They don't need our technical support. Those are great teams too to work with. And we love to keep in touch with them. But it's also about, you know, the community aspect of, you know, introducing teams to other teams. That can help a lot, right? Like getting excited and thinking about how they can collaborate as per the culture kind of that we see evolving in Aptos. It's definitely everything, as you mentioned. But, you know, it's hard to pick out one thing, right? Because someone who comes to a hacker house, gets excited about seeing other people building, gets excited about what they've built in a short period of time. And also they've had a good chance to play around with Move and see the benefits of the Aptos network. But it might not be enough for them, right? Like they have another job, they have something that they're going to take care of a family member or whatever. So there's other aspects where we definitely, you know, everyone will kind of need to help, like in any community out there, whether it's Aptos or others. And so something that you know, we definitely work hard to work with our community members and provide as much help as we can to help them kind of build out the ecosystem they want to see happen.
Would you call your outreach program truly decentralized in the way you are onboarding different communities?
I would say it's definitely, it's not one team or another, right? It's, you know, Lab just does what it can to help. The foundation is also, Aptos Foundation is also there, but it's also the teams already built in Aptos are a huge part of the developer effort. And so for instance, Thala is funding projects themselves and providing grants. They're an ecosystem builder at Aptos. We see others kind of bringing new projects into this space as well. And I think that's great. Like that is how I think the decentralized community starts to grow. When it's not just one, two, three entities, it's really about seeing a community kind of pushing each other to integrate new protocols. Hey, there's a gap here. We need this being filled. You know, do I know someone who's in the builder community in my locale or in my general area that would be a great fit for this? And that kind of word of mouth and also kind of grassroots efforts has paid off in dividends for Aptos. And that's, you know, something that we value a lot. That's why we make trips out to different places to kind of visit the community, whether it's in Korea or as in Thailand. A month ago, there's obviously a bunch of folks in Consensus, people who are going to Paris. You know, that's definitely us wanting to connect with them and meet them and encourage them, of course, to keep building and to keep pushing on their efforts to kind of see what they want to see in Aptos going into the future.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you this. So as the co-founder and CTO of Aptos, if a founder or a very serious developer is listening to this, like what are the 2-3 ideas that you could give them for their project to start building? And you would say like, okay, go build this on Aptos. This is what we want to see.
that's a good question. I mean, I think there's a lot of things you could build. I would say some of the things I'll just pick 3 random ideas. How's that? Because I think there's so many things that are interesting. One thing is, so DeepIn is a very interesting area that's, you know, been going on for some period of time. But boiling it down a little bit more, I think that payment infrastructure I talked about earlier with IOTA.net, I see that kind of expanding to other markets, right? So as you think about other scalable services that we built on the blockchain, you have to support efficient payments, efficient coordination. I think the infrastructure would be really interesting to see how we generalize that going forward and how we can enable more DeepIn projects to launch and just have a great infrastructure that is kind of rock solid and robust for any kind of use case out there, whether it's going to be wireless networks, inference training, it could be storage solutions, it could be compute clusters, it could be you know, any number of different kinds of things that provide scalable internet services for people around the world. I think the infrastructure would be truly fascinating to see kind of built out at scale and then testing and much. The other thing is that we have so many different things around our tokens, token extensions. We support confidential token transfers. With auditing support, we support the ability for these tokens to be allow listed and block listed and support kind of minting and burning strategies around them and inflation. Love to just kind of see like more uses, especially of the confidential token transfers. I think that's a really interesting thing that, you know, exists only on a couple of networks. And I think there's a lot of interest for people to be able to transact in a way that doesn't kind of reveal a lot of their, you know, what they're doing. And so pushing on that direction could be a really cool way to take advantage of what's possible in Aptos and, you know, take advantage of low fees and kind of realize the vision of, which is really about one of the key core tenets of value in blockchain is about how do we transfer value to each other. And of course, you want to do it in a way that, you know, respects people's privacy, but is also regulatory and compliant. And so that space is definitely an area that could be, that could use some new builders and some new innovation. Maybe the third idea that I'll lay out there is, you know, we definitely see a lot in the gaming space. And, you know, definitely it's a simple thing is going to be kind of NFT ownership, asset transfer. The new thing for us, of course, is leveraging the randomness primitives in loot boxes and, you know, kind of random events that happen on a game. But I would love to see, like, someone's going to build out a series of games that really share those aspects across them. So being able to leverage the gold you get in one game in another game in a way that makes sense, or loyalty points across these games in a way that that's the kind of core thesis, which is these assets you build and own are not just for a game, but for a series of games, I think could be a really, really different way to think about gaming and value of games to users across, you know, a spectrum of different products. So not having to think about like, okay, like I did really well in this one game and I've gotten to level 99 and my character's super powerful, but I kind of have to restart all my progress in this world. You can kind of almost think of it as like a multiverse of you kind of entering different worlds and just stepping into different portals and you being able to take your assets and your value, you know, with you from place to place. I think that, and that as a first class experience could be something kind of really, really exciting. So, I mean, there's a lot more greater ideas out there, but there's just kind of three things that, you know, that popped into my head just now. So, would love to see people take on these challenges.
Yeah, that's super valuable. I'm going to copy them. People ask, what should they build on Anvil? So that's super cool. Just one more question, and then we have our rapid fire.
All right.
So what's like the 2024 big goal for Aptos?
I would say the focus is really, for the Aptos Labs team, I'd say our focus is really on how do we enable developers even more? And so we're on board. I think the keyless technologies are going to go live in a couple of weeks or a couple of days. Not sure exactly when. That's going to be something that's going to be game changing for folks. Randomness will be turned on very soon in mainnet, same kind of time frame and period. We've seen latency has been something that we've been talking about a lot lately. And so one thing that has lacked in the space of crypto has been kind of transparency and reproducibility about performance metrics. There's a lot of numbers thrown around. I think those numbers all mean different things to different people. And so we've worked hard to kind of standardize across a lot of blockchains. We kind of released a latency benchmark a couple of weeks ago and talked a little bit about how Aptos is building out the kind of the fastest platform out there. We've also run experiments on scalability numbers and showed how everyone can kind of run the same numbers and get more than 30,000 transactions per second end to end, not just in some parts of the system. And just for context, that's a whole lot of Visas out there. Visa does about 150 million transactions a day. And then kind of also showing proof points here where ecosystem projects can build, you know, things like TapusCat have, you know, ran, 300 million transactions in like two, three days. Nothing went wrong in Aptos. Everything was fine. DeFi products went along smoothly. We saw T Labs issuing a whole bunch of tickets at the same time for different events. Meanwhile, TapusCat is setting records in terms of transactional volume on any blockchain out there. That helps to show people that this technology is viable and it is usable and it's not something that's no longer an experiment. And so those efforts kind of across the board, you know, better docs, continue to improve the language, continue to push on the infrastructure side around latency and performance, seeing these ecosystem projects take advantage of all these features that we're launching, the easier UX, are really the focus. It's really about developer experience and providing the best developer experience to also provide the best user experience. And so that's our focus for the remainder of the year, for sure.
Yeah, it looks like a busy year.
It's busy.
Cool. Okay, so I'm going to ask some quick questions. These are pretty much standard. We ask every guest. So what is that one book I am presuming you read, but you can also pick up anything, you know? It can also be a song. It can be a podcast that you think has left, you know, after reading it or listening to it, it changed really your perspective towards life and why?
That's a great question. I have not thought about that too much. I'd say the thing that really changed my perspective is just talking to great people around the world. I mean, so even as we talked earlier about the conversations with investors or conversation with other, you know, people building the space, thinking about my experiences talking with folks at Meta about, you know, what kind of scale we want to achieve and we want to get to billions of people. And then, you know, conversations around like what, you know, how are we benefiting the world? I think those are the ones that, you know, those are the ones that really inspire me the most. And kind of, I think, are reflecting the mission of what we're trying to achieve here at Aptos.
What is that one hobby that you would do more if you had more time? Like something you love doing outside work, please.
Yeah. I enjoy barbecuing a lot. It's kind of an interesting hobby. It requires a lot of fine tuning of processes. So like lighting up, when you light a fire for like a proper barbecue, you know, getting the fire to the right temperature, to the right size, and then kind of like being able to like make sure the food is cooked at appropriate you know, appropriate amount of heat, appropriate amount of char, getting the flavors of the wood in there. I think that's a really fun thing for me to do. I'd love to you know, fine tune that process quite a bit more and even maybe invest in a bit more gear in that space. But definitely a hobby that I love.
Nice. That's a good one. So if you were not working in blockchain, crypto, I mean, doing any of this, like in an alternate universe, what do you think your profession would be?
No tech or just no blockchain?
You have all the options in the world.
Okay. I highly suspect I'd be working in AI, to be honest, because like I said, I worked in high performance computing for a long time. That industry like kind of evolved into AI, and it's something I've always dreamed of working on again. But I also get to kind of work on that with blockchain because there's a lot of good projects building laptops in the AI space. And thinking about kind of the periphery of AI and how it interacts with blockchain kind of gives me that option. So I kind of get that benefit today, I would say.
Okay, cool. Good answer. What is that one word that describes your leadership style?
Maybe truth. I think we're always looking for searching for the truth, whether it's going to be searching the truth in the metrics or in the use cases, the utility, just kind of keep digging for it. You know, I'm a big believer in integrity and honesty. I mean, I think that also fits well in that. So I'd say that maybe truth is or honesty kind of would be the word I would pick.
It's a great value to have. Okay, this is the last one. I'm thinking, how many years should I say? I always change this in every podcast. So what advice would you give to 15 years younger Avery? So I'm giving you number 15, 15 years younger Avery. Yeah.
For me, I'd say be a bit more risk-taking. I think I was a lot more conservative back then. And I think, you know, when we sometimes think about our limitations or what we think we can do, you know, it's really surprising to see that, you know, at least I've observed this, is that when you start to keep pushing yourself and, you know, kind of expanding your horizons and taking on bigger challenges, usually it turns out really well. Like, you know, there's definitely like a rate at which you think about it, but, you know, if you're not failing, then you're probably not trying hard enough is my thought. Like, you know, we really ought to push ourselves harder until that point of failure where we feel very uncomfortable. And that uncomfortableness is actually a really great way to kind of judge, you know, how hard we're going. And also that uncomfortableness is how we grow. So I'd say just, you know, trying to find a way to make myself a little bit more comfortable. And then, you know, seeing where it takes me, I think would have been a great suggestion to make to my previous self.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a nice answer. But indeed you took enough risks and that's why you're here where you are. But so you wish you did it like earlier. Thank you so much, Avery. This was real fun, and thanks to Kenzie for joining on a very hectic day in Austin, Sachi for also co-hosting, and the team that helps us in producing this. See you next time, and thanks everyone for your time.